The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Jaya Bataka Swami on November 2nd, 1990 at New Talavan Farm in Carriera, Mississippi. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 13, Verse 63.
Uttayotaya Krishnasya Chirasya Padayopatan Aste Maitvang Pragrishtam Smitva Smitva Puna Puna Uttayotaya Krishnasya Chirasya Padayopatan Aste mahitvang pragrishtam smitva smitva puna puna. Rising and falling again and again at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. For a long time, Lord Brahma remembered over and over the Lord's greatness he had just seen. Translation with repetition. Rising and falling.
Rising and falling.
Again and again.
Again and again.
At the lotus feet of Lord Krishna.
At the lotus feet of Lord Krishna.
For a long time.
For a long time.
Lord Brahma.
Lord Brahma.
Remembered.
Remembered.
Over and over again.
Over and over again.
The Lord's greatness he had just seen.
The Lord's greatness he had just seen.
Purport. As stated in one prayer. Srutiṃ apare smritiṃ itare bhāratamanye bhajantu bhavabhītaḥ aham ihānandam vande yasyālinde param brahmā. Translation. Let others study the Vedas, Smriti and Mahabharata, fearing material existence. But I shall worship Nanda Maharaj, in whose courtyard is crawling the Supreme Brahman. Nanda Maharaj is so great that the Param Brahman is crawling in his yard, and therefore I shall worship him. Padyavali 126. Brahma was falling down in ecstasy because of the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who exactly resembled a human child. Brahma was naturally astonished. Therefore, with a faltering voice, he offered prayers, understanding that here was the Supreme Person. So, initially Lord Brahma didn't know who Krishna was. He was not sure that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He took the cows and the calves. All those pastimes occurred for 1 year. He came back. Krishna revealed his glory from the transcendental form of Lord Krishna. So many Vishnu forms came out. So many Lakshmi, so many Brahmas were worshipping him. All kinds of spiritual opulences were revealed. Brahma Deva could see everything in relationship to Krishna for a moment. He had this amazing realization. That Vasudeva Sarvamiti, Krishna was the sum total. He is everything, yet he is independent of everything. He is the supreme controller, yet at the same time he is aloof and having his own pastimes. Realizing so many transcendental glories of Lord Krishna, realizing that Krishna himself was present, realizing that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Absolute Truth, the ultimate reality of everything was present before him, realizing the greatness of Krishna's pastimes. All these things are overwhelming Brahma, and he's just exploding in ecstasy. Jumping up, he wants to offer prayers to the Lord, But then being overwhelmed with tears and ecstasy, he can't, he falls down again at the Lord and offers obeisance. And again, he wants to get up and offer prayer. He gets up, he tries to offer prayer, and he gets overwhelmed again. And again, he falls down on the ground in ecstasy. And again, he wants to get up and offer prayers. And again, he gets up, and then again, he's overwhelmed with ecstasy, tears cramming from his eyes. And again, he falls down. And like this, again and again and again, he's just overwhelmed with the transcendental ecstasy of realizing the Lord's unlimited spiritual glories. And so feeling so much affection and devotion and love for the Lord. How can you offer prayers when you're lying down on the ground paying obeisance? So you have to get up. When you're getting up, then again he's like overwhelmed. So again he falls down and offers obeisances again. And finally in the next verse it mentions, Sanayaratotaya vimrijjalochane mukunda udviksha vinamrakandara Kritanjali prasrayavan samahita sape paitur gadghadayaila telaya. Translation. Then rising very gradually and wiping his two eyes, Lord Brahma looked up at Mukunda. Lord Brahma, his head bent low, his mind concentrated and his body trembling, very humbly began with faltering words to offer praises to Lord Krishna. Report, Brahma, being very joyful, began to shed tears, and he washed the lotus feet of Krishna with his tears. Repeatedly he fell and rose as he recalled the wonderful activities of the Lord. After repeating obeisances for a long time, Brahma stood up and smeared his hands over his eyes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura comments that the word lochane indicates that with his two hands he wiped the two eyes on each of his four faces. Seeing the Lord before him, Brahma began to offer prayers with great humility, respect, and attention. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta Swami purports of the 10th canto, 13th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Stealing of the Boys and Calves by Lord Brahma, completed on the second day of November 1990, 504 Gaurabdha, the Dvitiya Parardha of Lord Brahma. So, get some insight into the spiritual bliss achieved by the devotee in realizing the Lord. Lord Brahma didn't know that this was Krishna, the original Krishna. When Krishna revealed himself to Lord Brahma in a very dynamic way, and then Lord Brahma could realize that all the pastimes Krishna is doing as a cowherd boy, all his pastimes are simply manifestations of his glory. And he is the same Supreme Personality of Godhead that's manifesting all the universes. Same Supreme Personality of Godhead, on one hand, that's the origin of all the Vishnus. But in spite of all that, he is coming down and playing like a cowherd boy, enjoying spiritual loving exchanges with his devotees. The glories of Krishna were difficult to understand. It's easier for the conditioned soul in one sense to understand absolute truth is impersonal, because it's just like the opposite. Today is day, then there's night. This world is with form, the unformed is the supreme. It's part of material logic. But that itself is the proof that it's not the absolute truth. The absolute truth has to be beyond our logic. So then, if one comes to the conclusion that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a person, then also it's easier to relate with Lord Narayan, who is all-powerful, all-majestic, all-opulent, worshipped in Vaikuntha but with great awe and reverence. That also is, relatively speaking, easier to relate with. Because one would picture that the Supreme Godhead, the ultimate powerful, would be having all this power and majesty and happiness. But then, this again, another extension of material logic. If you go deeper, then one can understand that even, I guess they were reading about one princess here in Louisiana and Mississippi, the last princess of a certain dynasty, who's from India. So they said, that the king, her father never had to touch money. Why is the king had to touch money? He's not going to pay the taxi, he's not going to pay the Everything, he's got treasurers, he's got ministers. He doesn't have to touch money himself. He doesn't have to go and buy and sell things. It's all done by other people. It's something like 1,600 servants and 19 cooks and a whole list of people. So, but even for some time, that king had his little private area. He'd go and play with the kids, or he would have some kind of an informal meeting. But as a king, it was difficult. But something was a little bit. So this informal aspect, if it's there, even in a mundane king, what to speak of the Supreme Lord? That intimate, informal exchange is the highest aspect of the Lord. And all the other things are more are expansions of the Lord. But His original Self is actually in these enjoyable pastimes with His devotees. So Brahma is coming in the middle of these pastimes. He's not relating with these pastimes at first. What's going on here? Then Krishna reveals to Brahma who he is. And then Brahma is being overwhelmed that Krishna is so amazing, his pastimes around, one couldn't even recognize that this is the Lord. That's how wonderful his pastimes are. He appears to be acting like a child that when Brahma came, he didn't know this was not an ordinary child. He took all of his cowherd boys and calves. When he came back, then Krishna revealed who he was. Then Brahma was really astonished. When he realized this is my Lord, and being overwhelmed with different meditations on the Lord's transcendental qualities, so he manifested all of these pure devotional ecstasies. Tears are pouring down from his eight eyes. His hairs were standing on end. He is quivering in his body. He is becoming stunned. He's practically fainting in ecstasy. His voice was choked up. We can understand all the Ashtashatika Bhav, all the eight ecstasies of devotional service were manifesting in the body of Lord Brahma. So again and again he is offering his obeisances, overwhelmed with ecstasy, overwhelmed with loving sentiments for the Lord. The Lord doesn't have to come down. He comes down in order to deliver his devotees. Devotees like Lord Brahma, devotees like so many other devotees are there, residents of Vrindavan, different conditioned souls have all assembled to be able to participate in these pastimes of the Lord. Just like here at 6:30 in the morning, I heard that the bus comes to pick up the kids to go to the public school. So you want to catch the bus, you have to be there at the right time, and you can catch the bus. So Krishna comes once in the 27th day of Brahma, 27th Kali Yuga. It was the 27th Kali Yuga and every day of Brahma, not Kali Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, like Lord Chaitanya. And even though Lord Brahma knows that Krishna is supposed to be there, but even Lord Brahma, at first he had doubts. Krishna's disguise was so expert, he's having these pastimes with the devotees. But the devotees are feeling so much transcendental love for Krishna. And then when Krishna gives his mercy to Lord Brahma, he's also able to experience this transcendental love for Lord Krishna. In the Vedic tradition, there's many pastimes where the Lord reveals Himself to His devotees. It's rich in the history of many great devotees who through their devotion or through the causeless mercy of the Lord, they could realize the presence of the Lord directly. And realizing the Lord is not something really casual, or it's not a non-event. It's an event so momentous, so overwhelming, so wonderful, so ecstatic, that practically you can see how, like Lord Brahma, the most sober entity in the whole universe, all knowing and what's going on in the entire universe and all the planets, he is overwhelmed, falling on the ground and jumping up and falling down again on the ground, jumping up, completely overwhelmed in joy and happiness to be seeing the Lord directly and offering his respects to the Lord. This idea of realizing God is mentioned in the Bible, Old Testament, is mentioned in other scriptures as well. Moses had some kind of partial realization of the Lord, but not so much information is given in other scriptures about aspect of perfection, God realization. Whereas in the Vedas, there's a lot of examples, especially in the Srimad Bhagavatam, every canto has got so many examples of great devotees who realize God. The Srimad Bhagavatam is considered the greatest literature in all of the Vedas because it's dealing directly with God realization. So many type of religious activities are there. So many kind of pious activities. Even different forms of spiritual realization. But we know that the form of realization of God as a person is considered to be the most complete and the most perfect realization. Because the personality of Godhead is the complete aspect of the or manifestation of the Absolute Truth. When different yogis realize, for instance, in Isha Upanishad, Vyasadeva realizes the impersonal Absolute Truth in the last verses. But he prays to the Lord that remove your glaring effulgence so I can see your eternal form of bliss. That the Lord, covering himself with material energy, covering himself with the effulgence of the spiritual Brahma-jyoti. But the devotees, even if they realize the Brahma-jyoti, they want that effulgence to be cleared away so that they can see directly the form of Shyamasundara. Obviously things are happening so fast here. When Brahma came, he didn't really stay long enough to study what Krishna was or to introspect. He had the idea to steal the cowherd voice and the cow calves left all in a sudden. Then what was a moment for him, it was a year by Vrindavan time, he thought, well, let me just wait a second, maybe I'm making a mistake, and let me check it out. And he came back, and then all these other things just happened, realizing Krishna, and he became completely joyful that Krishna is in his universe, that Krishna is before him, that Krishna's transcendental qualities are giving him so much love for Krishna that he's experiencing all this ecstasy. So when Brahma met Krishna, then all these wonderful expressions of ecstasy became arisen in his consciousness. When Lord Vishnu appeared before his devotees, they also received him with respect, offering obeisances. Sometimes the devotees also be very ecstatic. But the ecstasy that Lord Brahma has expressed here for Lord Krishna is something really extraordinary. And a devotee, when they are reunited with the Lord, Srila Prabhupada explained that they feel this unlimited joy. That Krishna comes and embraces the devotee and says, what has taken you so long? And the devotee is overwhelmed in ecstatic love of Krishna with his tears pouring from his eyes. Of course, in the case of Lord Brahma, he's got 8 eyes. So the 8 times as many tears are pouring. He only has 2 hands. He can hardly keep up with the tears coming. Right? Even if 2 eyes are crying incessantly, you have 2 hands to keep wiping the tear. But if you have 8, how can you manage? How can you cope? So Krishna embraces a devotee when they're reunited. A devotee is just overwhelmed. Love for Krishna. So Krishna asks, what has taken you so long? Actually, normally, to reach Krishna, it's not easy. Doesn't happen so quickly also. If someone takes a normal course of events, Brahma can return to Krishna at the end of his lifetime, which is 100 years by his calculation. Of course, there may be some variation, but this is standard calculation, 100 years by his time. So now we're in the second half of Lord Brahma's life. That means in this universe, we've been prisoners for more than 50 years times 12 months times 30 days times 1,000 ages times 4,300,000 years. We've already, in this universe, in this creation, we've been here that long. Taking birth sometimes as a demigod, sometimes as a demon, sometimes as an animal, sometimes as a human being. And Lord Brahma has got more or less, he's just like maybe 51 years old or something. No, we don't know exactly, but he's over 50. It's like maybe just over 50, just in his beginning of his second half, middle age. Another equally long period of time, or almost as long, is there on a normal course of it at the end of the universe, if somebody happens to be in Satyaloka with Lord Brahma, they can go up to the Vishnu Loka. When he goes, then the Satyaloka residents, they can accompany him. The other residents, like in Indralok and that, they try to reach Satyaloka, but they may or may not make it. Just like the scientists predict there's going to be an earthquake in San Francisco or an earthquake in different places. The people know it. More or less in the next 1 or 5 or 10 years there's going to be some earthquake, but like nobody is really prepared. Whenever it happens, it's always a big surprise, in spite of so many warnings. So even though more or less people will know that this end of the universe is coming, but you know, it could be give or take a few million years. But by Brahma's calculation, that's like just a few hours difference. But for the other entities in the lower planets that don't know, you know, it's a big time by their relative perspective. So they're not ready. They're not like all necessarily just ready. It comes as a surprise, so they have to also quickly try to get up to Satyaloka. Many don't make it. Some make it. So there's a long delay, but even that's risky. But here, Lord Krishna is so kind that he is giving out his pastimes. He's come as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, giving us a process whereby in this short period of time, if you take it as a percentage of Lord Brahma's lifetime, it's an insignificant drop of time, our life. Not even a drop in the bucket. I don't know how many drops in a bucket, but I'm sure it's not a drop in the bucket. It may be a drop in the ocean of Lord Brahma's lifetime. I don't think a bucket has that many drops. So, in this very short period of time, we can realize Lord Chaitanya, we can realize Krishna face to face, like Lord Brahma is realizing. The difference is that we are a short lifetime. At the end of this lifetime, being Krishna conscious, we can go back to Krishna. Therefore, Brahma admires the good fortune of the devotees. He hankers for their good fortune to be able to go back to Krishna so quickly. Maya is expert to create many necessities of life, working for our maintenance. And now in Kali Yuga, this is more complicated. Before, if you had a horse and buggy, it was all right. People could have a couple of servants even. But now it's all do-it-yourself with many machines. But to maintain these machines, one has to work to pay the bills. So society is like that, that everyone has to work hard in order to maintain their status quo, your living standard. So much energy is going like that, that in spite of getting all the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, being able to realize Krishna face to face at the end of this lifetime, or if you are really enthusiastic even during the lifetime, it's not impossible, although more rare. But we allow these valuable opportunities to slip through our fingers. The facility that Srila Prabhupada gave us to live in a temple community, to give us the facility of worshipping the deities, of chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare, and associating with the devotees is inconceivable good fortune. And someone can remind someone, or even can have various meetings and group meetings and classes in Ishtagosi. Ultimately, it's up to every individual to consider what a great opportunity we're getting and to try to, in spite of, Maya will give unlimited excuses, unlimited reasons, but in spite of whatever Maya puts up, to actually take the advantage of Lord Chaitanya's mercy, to engage in chanting the holy names. In Mayapur, where everybody is living, Prabhupada encouraged that everyone should even go to the noon arti if they can. Morning and evening arti is always packed. Hardly you have to tell the devotees to go to Mangal arti or evening. In fact, the guests come and they always see hundreds of devotees chanting. It's very inspiring for them. Sometime Mangal Arti and Gaur Purnima Thakur, you may have 2,000 devotees. There's no standing room only, of course. Even if you wanted to sit, you couldn't sit. So packed up. But apart from Gaur Purnima, even on other weekends, it's completely packed. And in the evening also, a lot of the Maharajis can't come in the morning because of children or something. maybe only 50% or I don't know what percent, some few less Matajis, not 100% Matajis come with kids. But you see in the evening aarti, there's a very good attendant. So Prabhupada there he was encouraging go to noon aarti. Srila Prabhupada actually wanted us to fill our life with as much Krishna consciousness as we can. Of course, here everyone is working. The noon aarti is out of the question, maybe except for the Gurukul or something. But evening aarti and morning aarti is very possible. There's a difference from India. Like in Jaipur, for Mangal aarti, the place that Radha Govinda temple is packed. People run to go to the temple when they hear the bells of the aarti ringing. There's nobody that's telling them if you had to get up to Mangal aarti or making them some kind of decision. They develop that degree of spontaneous affection for the Lord, that they want to be there for that aarti. In fact, in Guru Vayur, the morning aarti for the deity is at 3 a.m. And every day there's thousands of people for that aarti. In fact, you had to get a special permission. If you, like as a sannyasi, I had to speak the night before and get like at 2:30 to get in before the crush, so I can get a front row darshan. So you can see that how in India, why it's still considered a holy place. Not, you know, you go there, you'll see the dirty roads, you'll see the coolies, you'll see the beggars, you'll see so many things. But people are spontaneously interested in spiritual life. To some, you know, some people are at least. Not everybody, but some people are. So that is that opportunity that Prabhupada is giving us. People say, I'm an older devotee, I'm mature. So older and mature, of course, means that we take the opportunity to personally motivate ourselves to make our lives so that whenever we are, it's possible. That may not always be possible, but as far as possible, which means most of the time, to actually take advantage of greeting the Lord. Lord Chaitanya, when he would hear the temple bell ringing in Jagannath Puri, he would be running sometime, like a, just running, I'm late. And then when he'd see the Lord, sometimes he'd faint in ecstasy and fall before Lord Jagannath. So I think Vedanta Krit goes to Jaipur, so he knows more about. I never actually been to Jaipur. I just heard about. And when they open that curtain for Radha Govinda, what happens? They all shout out. So somehow or another, if we can get this mercy to have the love of Krishna, like Lord Brahma is manifesting here, you know, we could hanker for that day. When will I feel that type of ecstasy whenever the deity's curtain is opened or whenever that opportunity, that spontaneous desire that, okay, I'm doing all my duties, but the high point is to be able to gather together with the devotees and chant Hare Krishna and taste that little drop of spiritual ecstasy. Because that's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, that naam bina kichu nahi ko ar chodha bhuvano majhe. In the eternal reality, there's nothing in the entire 14 planetary system from Brahmaloka down to Patal except this chanting of Hare Krishna, except this devotional service. To whatever extent, there's a reality, like if you had some kind of a polarized glasses where you could only see spiritual activities, you could only see the eternal reality. You'd put them on, the whole world would disappear, nothing is there. All you'd see is the holy name. All you'd see is few devotees chanting Hare Krishna and doing devotions. Everything else would disappear. It doesn't exist in the eternal reality. It's simply there in temporary time. Nothing is going to stay. It's all sandcastles. All the activities of our life, whatever is not devotional service, is just blank spaces. So knowing that, then the devotee wants to always remain connected with the Lord. And the high points when we can really focus on the Lord is a special interest. So that is the mood that makes a holy dham or makes creating a place of pilgrimage. Prabhupada said we should create places of pilgrimage. It's the desire of the devotee to serve the Lord. That's what makes it especially place of. Why Vrindavan especially? You see thousands of people yelling, Radhe, Radhe, Radhe. Right? If you walked in Vrindavan, everybody was crashed out and everything, and nobody was. It would, even though you know there's a holy dham, but you wouldn't have to say. You go, people are mad now trying to go to Ayodhya for the building their Ram temple. All these, when you see that somebody has some enthusiasm to serve the Lord, that's what creates the atmosphere of the spiritual world. Because that's what Vrindavan means, is that everybody is mad after serving Krishna. And somehow Brahma comes in and crashes the party, doesn't know what's going on, steals the everything. Then finally he realizes what's going on, and then he himself is like so overwhelmed that he can't even control himself. He's just so happy, he's so joyful, so ecstatic, that he's gone practically mad, jumping up and down like a little child in ecstasy, tears pouring out of all his eyes. So we're very fortunate to hear these pastimes from the lotus lips of Srila Prabhupada, so that we can pray to Lord Brahma in his ecstasy, that he may bless us, that we can become spontaneously attracted to chanting the holy names, that we can become spontaneously attracted to serving Gaura Nitai and Radharada Kanta, and to associating with the devotees. Hare Krishna. Questions or darshan? Questions?
Maharaj, to some extent, we can probably understand a little bit why the devotees are attracted to Lord Krishna. But what makes the unalloyed love or the unmotivated service of the devotee, what particular qualities in the devotee is it that really attracts the Lord? To name a few, there must be some qualities that attracts the Lord, the devotee's love.
When the devotee renders pure devotional service, that's attractive to the Lord. The devotee, the conditioned soul acting in the material world independently, there's nothing really very attractive about that for the Lord. When they, in accordance to their desire to serve the Lord, in accordance with their desire to approach the Lord, it becomes more attractive. It's more glorious when someone wants to do some religious principles, but even better if they want to become liberated from the material world. Better yet, when they want to realize the super soul, but the best is when someone is engaging in devotional service. That's really attractive for the Lord. Just like you have a small child, but you know, when the baby is relating with you, is depending on you, so there's some attraction there, even though one sense insignificant, but another sense. And especially, we hear that when the babies try to say their father's name, they recognize, they say, you know, I don't know, Dada or something. But that's a special source of happiness for the mother and father. You know, it's like a little high point there. So, when that conditioned soul remembers Krishna and wants to serve Krishna, that pure devotional service is attractive even to Krishna. Not only attractive, but it can purchase Krishna. The Krishna promises to reciprocate, although we're insignificant, but if we give our whole self to Krishna, Krishna will give his whole self to us. Talk about a business deal. You can't. There's no great king or great person, even if some political follower gives his life, you know, for the leader, but the leader is not going to reciprocate and give everything just for that one little person. Because he's one person, he has to see over so many. But Krishna being unlimited, he can individually expand and individually relate with each devotee. He's not limited like that. So he can reciprocate. Although we're insignificant, but he's so unlimited that he can relate with each insignificant part of him. He is not limited. But like one president, he's got millions or 250 million people in America. How can he personally relate with each individual? It's beyond his capacity. He can only have a cabinet of 20 people and talk with a few Congress committee chairmen. He can hardly relate with all the representatives in the House of Congress. What to speak all, you know, in a personal way. It would take his whole time. There's only 24 hours in a day. But Krishna is unlimited. He's not limited by time also. In the spiritual world, there's no limitation of time. So Krishna can expand himself unlimitedly. He can be having unlimited simultaneous pastimes going on. So because of Krishna's great, although we're so insignificant, that doesn't limit Krishna because he's so unlimitedly great. And he can relate. And what he becomes attracted when we are approaching him in pure devotional service. He had to purchase it. He's attracted even when we do a little devotional service. He's attracted. Is that clear? Any other question?
Sometimes you run across devotees who feel that they don't need to be trained up in a particular
our system is Guru Parampara. We always learn from those who know. Everyone is born ignorance. We don't know anything. There's nothing to be ashamed about. We don't know something. When we are born and we're taught, right? Process is a continual learning process. And we enter spiritual life, that learning continues. So someone may be very expert, they may learn in one day. Lord Chaitanya, he was shown one letter and he would memorize it immediately. And that's the next letter. He learned the alphabet in 15 minutes. But at least one, he also went through the procedure of learning. Someone showed him the alphabets. This is A, this is B, this is C, this is A, Ba, Ka. So this is our system. If we don't learn it from someone, then how we know that what we're doing is right? We are not in the parampara. We may be mental speculating. So the devotee always wants to confirm whatever they're doing with sadhu, shastra and guru. Not just take it that they know it from only reading the book or from... Otherwise, as Prabhupada explained, someone may have a superficial understanding like that veterinarian pastime where the assistant of the veterinarian didn't take the whole course and he thought he knew veterinarian science, how to cure lumps in the neck of the horse, but in the end he started killing the horse instead.